Welcome to the B-side. Yeah, you guys are going to miss my introductions, for sure.
Definitely not going to miss that.
You are so
innocent. Welcome to the B-side.
You're going to have withdrawal on my B-side introduction. Hey, it's the podcast of Twas Nice Church. It is Monday, October 6th. I'm Rhoda Brooks, and with me is Steve Croker and Tyler Crawford. Welcome back, new dad.
Thank you.
New dad, how's it going? Are you functioning? Do you have sleep in your body?
Oh, yeah. We got like 9 to 10 hours a night.
What?
No, no.
That's not what you told me yesterday.
I get a lot more sleep than my wife, I'll tell you that much. He said gratefully.
Yeah, I just put that little tagline in there.
No, it's been great.
That's good, she's very cute.
Well, I wouldn't expect anything. Have you seen me? I know the people are listening haven't, but I wouldn't expect any less from me. Behind this beard is nothing but softness and cutiness.
I can't believe you just said that about yourself.
Yeah. That's why I grow the beard. That's why I grow the beard. It covers up the wuss underneath.
Well, yes, it's true. Today is my last podcast. I know the boys are sad. I can't join them on Mondays anymore.
Just pretend sad.
But the guys are, so, you know, you should send in your nominations. If you know someone who can come on here with the guys and both laugh at and
get angry at.
Not get too frustrated with Tyler.
And by guys, she really more means me. Her and Steve seem to go on famously.
Oh no, I'm
going to
miss that.
Put it this way, if you've got something you'd like to, you got a bone you want to pick with me, why don't you come on the podcast and let me have it.
Send your applications in. Yeah. Maybe I just have to come back as a guest host once in a while so I can reminisce. But yeah, but I'm so happy today because for my last B-side podcast as host, we have lots of questions. You guys have no idea, listeners out there, how happy that makes us. We love questions. In fact, we have so many questions today that we're not going to get to all the questions. We want to say thank you, and we're really sorry if we don't get to your question, but we love getting them in. So keep sending the questions in, and we are going to just get right into it today because we are trying to do our podcast in 30 minutes, and so we're going to go right into questions. And our first question today has to do with a reference to yesterday's sermon. And in yesterday's sermon, in our Drift series, we were talking about Abraham and how sometimes we die in faith without seeing the promises that God has made to us come true. So you talked about how Abraham, you know, he left his land and he took his family to a strange land with the promises of what was to come, and he died in a tent without the
That's
city.
A nightmare.
I know, Steve and Tyler and I were all laughing because none of us are really big campers. We're like, whoa.
I don't even want to
like
sleep
major
in a tent.
Faith. That was like,
that sounds awful. Yeah.
He just loved his home.
I think that's called tree planting.
So obviously that wouldn't be anything that any of us would pursue, but we looked at that. And so
what,
how,
faithfulness?
No.
Camping.
Oh, camping. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. And so, but here's the question. How do we live faithfully without seeing a resolution, or maybe not even resolution, but the purpose behind some of our pain, or I'll even say like sacrifice or pain in our lives? So it could be someone who's suffered a miscarriage or the loss of a loved one, or who's dealt with a life of God's put them in a position that's dealt with a lot of injustice in their life, let's say. So how do we live faithfully without understanding the purposes of that? And maybe we see those answers. Sometimes we do. I know in my life I've seen things and I go, I can look back in hindsight. Sometimes we're not allowed that hindsight. We're not given that. Mm-hmm. So for someone who's listening to that and go, like, how do I do that though? You know, how do I have that kind of faith?
Yeah, I mean, one thing we don't want to do is trivialize anyone's pain. Or just give like easy answers to tough situations, because even if you have incredible theological insight, something like miscarriage still sucks, still hurts, loss of a loved one.
Still devastating.
Whether you have answers or not, it still hurts, it's still painful, it's still hard. And so there's sort of like a response that's pastoral and a response that's theological, and sometimes wisdom is knowing which one is appropriate when.
Yeah.
So if the person was in front of
sometimes
us here,
both true.
Yeah, yeah, and they're both right responses, but, you know, if a person was actually coming to one of us saying like, oh, you know, I just suffered a miscarriage, or my mom just died or something like that, we wouldn't pull out the verses and give a good theological understanding of suffering and the role it plays in the Christian life. We'd probably just give them a hug and pray for them and love on them and care for them and encourage them. And,
well, and the Bible tells us to do that with one another. Yeah. We're part of the answer in that, right?
Yeah, so without... But then there's also a time for, like, thinking through theologically how does this work, right? I think it's important for us to come to a place of faith where we are okay with not having all the answers. I mean, we want answers because then it feels like it justifies it to us, as if God owes us an answer as to why we suffer. Because if God would explain himself, then I would trust him.
Mm.
But if he doesn't explain himself, it's going to be really hard for me to trust him. But I think we just have to come to a place where we can trust him even if he doesn't explain himself.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard. It's not as easy as me saying it. And but I think it's true, is that we feel like God owes us answers, but he just doesn't.
Yeah, there's a sermon that I have on my iPod that it's like 21 minutes, and it's this unbelievable, like, there's this keyboard music in the background, and this guy just talking for 20 minutes on the nature of God. And I've listened to it countless times. Like, I've got parts of it memorized. It's one, I have no idea who did it. I found it as a student in Bible college on a disc in my student box. Somebody put it in there, and I'm pretty confident that they put it in the wrong box. I took the disc going, what is this? No label.
This is the best keyboard music.
No, but it had like no, you know, it had no address. It was just blank. I didn't know who it was from. I didn't know who it was intended to. Put it in my CD player. Yeah, CD player. I said it. This was 12 years ago. 30, and it was just, anyway, it's this guy talking, preaching on the nature of God and just kind of said, when we, this line in it that says, this is what just popped in my head, is that when we trust ourselves to the nature of God, there are no more bad days, just days of grace. And I think that's a fitting kind of thought process for something like this. When we go, it's not saying there's no more hard days. It's not saying there's no more things where things are going to go wrong. It's saying that if we see our lives and the things that come into it as simply just acts of benevolent grace by God, and we trust ourselves to his nature, some of these hardships... don't start to make sense necessarily, but we can be okay with not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's kind of like, in a sense, it's almost like I equated to like having a joint bank account with my wife. I don't look at her receipts. I don't go, what did you buy at X, Y, or Z, like wherever you went. I don't care. I don't need to know because I just trust her. Plus, she makes more money than me, so it doesn't matter. He's the breadwinner, so she makes the rules.
That's totally separate conversation.
Just, but it's just a level of going, you know, I don't need to know everything when I trust who's kind of there with me.
What I loved last night, just making me think about this, was last night an encounter. The first segment that Holden introduced was on worship, and he really brought it back to adoration and just taking time, not with supplication, and petition, but just adoring God and focusing on him. And I was thinking about this in relation to our dress series, and like, if we need to spend time just adoring and building relationship in who God is, so when those times come, we have a foundation of a picture of him that we can go to that helps us with our trust and faith in him. If we're going along and everything's good and we don't spend time adoring God, I don't see how when the hard things come along, it's going to be easy for us to trust him because we haven't really fostered that right picture of him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I don't really know you, Steve, I kind of see it front, but I don't have, don't know you, it's going to be my trust level with you is still going to be different than when I build relationship and foster a friendship with you and get to know you and go, okay, I can trust him. God is God and he deserves our adoration, but it still works relationally. Mm-hmm. So it just really hit me last night. I'm going, yeah, it's important for us to spend time enduring God because those days will come.
Mm-hmm.
And Abraham had faith in who God was, not because of what God did for him, but who God was and what God promised.
The only other thing I'd add to this is... we have to be open to the possibility in our pain, our struggles, these things that happen that are tragic and wrong and broken. Like, maybe that's something else I would say, is like God mourns with us at, you know, if, at the loss of life and these types of things. We should be upset because they're part of the broken, cursed world that he's restoring. And when we mourn at death, it's because we're longing for Eden and for everything to be restored again. And what has God done about it? He sent his son, and who also experienced these very things. You know, God is the father of a murdered son. He knows what it's like to lose a loved one. And so God knows, God understands, God is doing something about it. He's restoring all things. And someday everything will be restored and made better. And somehow it'll be more beautiful for having been broken at one point and then restored. And somehow our joy will be bigger because it was broken and then restored. And God will be more glorious, and his grace will be put on better display, and we'll be more satisfied in him because things were broken first and then restored. So that's something, I mean, that's all true as well. But I think the one thing here and now that we have to open ourselves up to is the possibility that these painful situations we're going through are somehow in some way for our good. It doesn't feel like it, but it's just taught so often in the Bible that you have to be open to that, that the things we're going through are for part of our sanctification, that somehow God is making us more holy, or is teaching us, or is growing us and stretching us, or putting us in a position where we can empathize and understand, putting us in a position where our hearts break and for the things that break his heart, or putting us in a position where we can minister to others, or putting us in a position where we have nothing in and of ourselves that will bring comfort and strength, and we have to throw ourselves at his mercy. There are so many possible good things in our lives that God could be doing through broken and ugly situations. And it's not a beat yourself up thing. Like, if only I learned the lesson, God won't do this, as if it's a punishment. Not at all. Like, that I don't think is a biblical idea. But,
and neither is it to trivialize it and say, you shouldn't grieve, because don't you know God's going to work this?
Yeah.
Like, grief in itself is not wrong, but it's the fact that we have hope and that we don't despair. You can grieve.
Absolutely.
But you're not despairing because you have a hope, and that's your testimony.
We shouldn't be like going brainstorming, like, what is it that God wants me to learn so I can get it done with and move on?
Yeah.
But it is a, how in this situation is God calling me to reflect him more fully, to look more and more like Jesus, to trust him more deeply? And that's how we don't waste the pain, is when we are actually seeking to glorify God and grow in Christ.
This is the exact type of situation where that Romans 8 passage gets tossed out, right? Like, where if you say it all comes back to how you deliver that news, right? Oh, so Steve, you've had a bad news, and I say, well, God, you know, Romans 8:28, God works all things for the good of those who love him.
Which could get you a punch in the face at some point.
Which, and might deserve a punch in the face at some point, depending on how it's delivered, in the sense of going like, don't use a verse like that to trivialize my pain, but maybe use it to serve as a reminder that, like, even in this, God works still. There's two different ways it can go, as opposed to, like, you know, hey, like, buck up, pal, here you go, like, you know.
But to kind of get to the question, back to the question, sometimes we use that verse wrongly to say, oh, you lost a baby, God will get you another one.
Right.
Or you lost your job, God has a better one planned.
Yeah.
That God uses these things for good, meaning, in our interpretation, that if something bad happens, something better than that is coming. But sometimes that's not true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes someone gets killed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And their life is over. There's not something better in this life for them. Sometimes it just hurts. And, you know, I think I know situations where there's been miscarriage, and then later there's been life. I mean, that's our story. We had miscarriages before we had children. But I also know situations where people have had to bury infants and never have children again.
Mm-hmm.
And God still loves them.
And he's still graceful.
And he's still gracious to them. And somehow this too is for good.
Mm.
It's still painful. It hurts. It's an echo of the broken world that God is overcoming by grace. And we should grieve with them and love them and long for better days. And we won't have answers necessarily. God does not owe us answers. And he will walk with us through the hard days as we long for better ones, even when we don't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think part of that desire for us to know and want to know is just that hindsight is the only navigation we have and how to move forward. We don't know what's ahead of us, mm-hmm. right? Like I heard it explained, we only have the rearview mirror, we don't have the windshield in life, so we don't know all the time, like, we can only navigate based on what's happened in the past.
Yeah.
And so we want to know how to navigate in the future based, okay, this hurt, that was unpleasant, how do I keep moving forward based on that? And then sometimes I think, again, it just comes back to, like, we have to sometimes swallow that desire to be like God and trust in the nature of God, that He is mm-hmm. He is who He said He is, He'll do what He said He did, or said He would, and that at the end of the day, our life or any other life is not going to be not even wasted. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we just, that's the only perspective. You know, I mean, one of the best perspectives I ever heard from somebody on this kind of context of miscarriage, my wife and I were sitting with a couple and their two children were playing in our living room and they were talking about their miscarriage and the wife just said, like, as much as it hurt and it was terrible, this wouldn't be our family if it didn't happen. You know, we wouldn't have these two. And it was just an interesting perspective for me to not, she didn't minimize anything about what happened, but I just thought it was an interesting kind of perspective to say, like, it added a bit of clarity to how, it wasn't necessarily the reason or a reason that it happened, but it just gave a perspective to go, like, I can trust God because this, I love my children, mm-hmm. and this wouldn't have been my reality had mm-hmm. that unfortunate instance not happened, right?
Well, speaking of on our series, continuing on in the Drift series, another question came in and came up. And it said, what if you are, you know, in your Drift series, Steve, you were talking about, you asked in one of the sermons, like, when were those exciting, do you remember your exciting beginning to a Christian life or days that were your real best days and days of growth and remembering those? And you had referenced that kind of context in one of your sermons. And so what if someone is saying, you know, I didn't have this really massively dramatic conversion or this period of time I can go back and say, man, in those years I was on fire, you know, and I had this major growth there. And the person's more like, I grew up in a Christian home perhaps, and I just always believed, but I don't have dramatic, exciting days.
I don't have a good testimony.
Yeah, and so, but you know, some people really feel almost shame about that. You know, they go, oh, I don't have an exciting testimony. And or they say, I feel like I've always just kind of drifted along, right? So someone's wondering, like, what if I can't identify with that? What if I can't identify mm-hmm. with having best days, exciting mm-hmm. growth, and stuff like that? So what would your response be to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so everyone has a different story. Some people have a story of, like, dramatic conversion or a reconversion, recommitment, or, you know, something like that. And they can point to a specific day, specific time. This is when my life changed and God did this in my life. Other people can't in the same way. And that's often okay. Usually that's okay. You know, I think of Melissa, her story would be something like that, where she just came to faith as a young, young child and always believed and grew up believing. She never had, like, a rebel days or, like, a dramatic sort of turning point. It was just always her story, was kind of growing faithfully, believing, Christian family, Christian home, stuff like that. And so in some ways it's awesome. I mean, that's great. That,
mm-hmm. You shouldn't necessarily covet the dramatic story.
Like, oh, I wish I had a heroin addiction I could turn away from or something. Like,
you forget the perspective of, like, you might hear a dramatic story of someone who's just got, their life is filled with family brokenness or pain, and you go, I don't have that. And in one sense, you're actually not envying the life, you're envying the turning, the emotional response, the glory of the emotional response. Yeah. Whereas, I think sometimes I've heard people amazingly just share about how, like, they have a story like that, and it becomes about, like, the grace that God showed in their life by putting them in a great home and giving them loving parents who raised them in Jesus and taught them the Bible and took them to church, and that they, you know, It's not the Pharisee's prayer on the street corner saying, thank you, you didn't make me like the tax collector, but it's very much a, just like a deep-rooted thankfulness that God mm-hmm. was gracious, preemptively gracious almost. Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking back going, I never had a high time like that, like a time of great growth in the best days, sometimes that's okay, and you go, there was no dramatic event. But I would just ask, are you really a Christian? Just because sometimes...
So you're not saying, like, because you didn't have that, we're going to question that you're a Christian. It's more the question of, I never had that, I just feel like I'm drifting along. So is the question you're saying, like, is it just something you grew up knowing to be true, or is it something you actually have a relationship?
Personal faith.
Personal relationship.
If you can't point to a specific point or specific crises or, you know, where you felt new conviction and mm-hmm. new faith, but it's just something you've always expressed, that's great. But for some people, they just grew up in the church. Mm-hmm. And they grew up in youth group, and they never really made it their own. So
it's cultural.
Yeah, it's just sort of something you've been surrounded with. So I would ask that question. Have you ever, and do you now, confess your sin and actively trust in Jesus instead of yourself? Like, is the gospel part of your story? Do you...
is it an active part of your
life? It may not have ever been a dramatic confession or turn of direction in which that happened, but are you still testifying to Christ in your life alone as your only trust, as your only justification for God? So I would ask that question, though, like, are you sure? And then if you say, yeah, I just don't know when that really started, well, that's great. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, so then there's another part to that question, right? Or something that comes out of that question. And that is this definition or understanding of drift. Last week it was, what do you mean by balance is not biblical? Like, do you understand the term balance? So in the term drift, someone could look at, oh, well, you're doing a whole series and like we need to make sure we hold fast to what we know unless we drift. But does drift mean actually drifting away from something? Or does it mean drifting along, I'm going in the right direction, I'm just not driving a speedboat, okay? Mm-hmm. But at least I'm not drifting away. I'm still drifting in the right direction, I'm just drifting along, like on an inner tube versus a speedboat.
Yeah.
So that's not so bad. You know, like, so what is... That question has kind of come up in conversation of, like, but I'm not necessarily drifting away. I might just be drifting along.
In the analogy, the way we're using it, I mean, there's different ways you could use it, but what we're talking about is... And it's kind of borrowed from Hebrews, right? Hebrews mm-hmm. 2, it talks about drifting. And then in Hebrews 6, it talks about the promises of God as an anchor. So there's mm-hmm. like being anchored by the promises of God, or there's drifting away. So we're talking about how you're either active in your life, your Christian faith, you're repenting, you're worshiping, you're walking with God, you're pursuing Him, or you are drifting into a dead faith. You're drifting into something that's fake and false, that's empty, that has the exterior of Christianity, but maybe not the content and the heart of it. So it's not about we're all making progress, just some at different paces. It's not what we're talking about. We're saying if you aren't active in your faith, you're expressing it in your heart through worship, repentance, prayer, walking with Christ, pursuing Him, living on mission, if you aren't practicing these things and your heart's engaged in it, you will naturally be drifting away from God.
So what we're saying is you don't actually drift towards God.
You
have to at least be rowing.
You
don't have to be rowing. You need to at least be actively going towards.
There's no such thing, and I think you used the phrase kind of help paint the picture. You don't drift along. You drift away in the sense of, even if you think about like the narrow path and the wide path. What's the other one? like in the sense of it being it's an uphill. Jesus talks about this like being an uphill climb, and I think very much if we're going to use the analogy of a river with some sort of current that drifts, we as Christians we are actually called to run counter to the current, against the current. We need, which is hard paddling or hard striding. And so if you're drifting...
We're actually called to run the race and pour our lives out as drink offerings. Yeah. That doesn't even sound like a brisk walk.
Yeah.
Really, right?
if we're drifting, we are We are being taken in the opposite direction of what we might want.
Yeah, with the current of our sin and selfishness.
It would be like saying, I'm going to sit in a boat in the river, in the Fraser River, and expect to go nowhere. No. Mm-hmm. If you want to go in one direction, you are going to be working your tail off, mm-hmm. or a motor wheel, to get you in that direction, or you're going to be getting swept up to sea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It
is really a North American, like, we're going back to the whole culture thing, is we actually believe, like, we don't want to push upstream, we don't want to even sometimes be perceived as that, but we don't want to drift because we believe in God, so we don't want to drift away. So we're just not going to, like, make any waves, and we're not going to do anything, we're just going to drift along, and we actually think it's possible. And like, we somehow faked ourselves into thinking that that's a viable option.
And we get it. Like, I mean, the reality is, like, if I'm on a bike ride. I don't own a bike, but if I was on a bike ride, and I have two routes.
Sports analogy.
One involves a very steep hill, and one involves a flat non-hill to get to the same spot. I don't know how that would be possible, but...
geographic impossible. Yes.
I'm not choosing the hill. Like, I'm gonna, like... Or, you know what I mean? Like,
you're not naturally choosing the hill.
I'm not going, like, yes, I want to be embarrassed and walk my bike up this hill, or whatever. Like... I want my quads to burn like the fires of Hades. It's not a natural. It doesn't happen by accident. My point is, it doesn't happen by accident. You don't get up. You don't hike a mountain by accident.
We don't go to the same destination.
Nobody does the chief and just is like, wow, huh, oh golly, how did I get here? Right? Or the other one. All things I've never done.
You mean a grass grind or something?
People who care about fitness.
And that's another B-side question in podcasts that you hear. Right?
I care about fitness, just not weird fitness where you walk.
I just don't even know how to touch that one, really.
I want to swing something. I want to hit something.
That's my chief.
You know what's funny is that my first year in youth ministry, after I moved down to this area, I put on the summer calendar that we were going to do the Gross Grind as a youth group. Our youth group was going to do the Gross Grind together because they'd heard about it. Gross Mountain would be great. And it was supposed to happen a week after we went on a trip to Creation Fest. So we went to Creation Fest as a youth group.
You got Creation Fest, nature, Gross Grind, kind of
what our youth group did. So I, on our very, like, within 13 seconds of getting to Creation Fest, while goofing around with one of my students, I stepped in a gopher hole and, like, destroyed my left ankle. Like, just, I couldn't walk. If you've ever been to the gorge, it's, like, could not picture a worse place to destroy your ankle because it's all, like, steep paths and hills. Like, it's a natural amphitheater that goes downhill. So, anyway, so we decided not to do the girls' grind. Because I was like, I asked a couple of them, like, I think I can do it with a sprained ankle. And I remember one of my friends being like, I don't think you can do it, period. And I never got how hard it was, and now I just am like, it's stuck in my head, so I thankfully never.
I thought it'd be fun.
God spared me.
I thought it'd be fun to do the chief. And so it was our anniversary last year. I'm like, let's do it. And Melissa thought we were going for like a nice hike in the mountains. She had no sense of it. And we went to like Subway and got sandwiches. My job was to bring the sandwiches in the backpack and go. And she was like, she hated it. She just hated it. It was just like stairs. She thought it'd be like a nice walk. It was stairs and stairs.
Did she like the view, or did she? Could she not even appreciate it?
Loved the view. Yeah, it was just the way to get there. Yeah. And then here's the part though. We get to the top. She did it. She like persevered. Super. Sucked it up. It was I was really proud of her. Gets to the top. I'm digging through the bag.
Oh no!
I left the sandwiches in the car.
Oh! Happy anniversary!
So I'm like, hey, beautiful view. Hope you're not hungry.
Oh man! And on that note,
did you guys go all the way to the top, like do the rope?
If you have anniversary suggestions for Steve, then please send me.
Yeah, don't take it from me. I've taken my wife to Burger King 3 times on our anniversary. It's like our little tradition.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because we just are like, we don't need to do something silly. This year,
guys are listening to the podcast.
This year, I took her to the King. Had a great dinner because she was pregnant. And I was like, whatever you want, baby. I'll do whatever you want.
Okay, well, on that note, we're going to wrap it up. But don't forget, we've got some questions here still, but we'd love to hear more. So when you listen to next week's sermon or something comes up and you have a question, you know where to send it. bside@towassonalliance.org. The guys would love to get your questions.
And we would love any nominations for a third person. Who do you think, like, close your eyes and imagine who would be a fun person to have at this table with Steve and I, whether answering questions or asking the questions. Seriously, send nominations. I'm not kidding. Send nominations, send suggestions. If you want to volunteer yourself, you know,
and maybe Steve and I will consider them.
Maybe we'll do some guest hosts. Keep things interesting. Steve's looking at me like, shut up.
Okay, well, we're wrapping up. Thanks for joining us.
Bye, Rhoda.
Bye. Bye.